Welcome to That Entrepreneur Life, a podcast about entrepreneurship that takes you from idea to launch and beyond. Each week, your hosts, Andrew Lees and Clint McPherson, discuss different business topics aimed at adding value to any entrepreneur's journey.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of That Entrepreneur Life. I'm Clint McPherson, usually co-hosting each episode with Andrew Lees, but unfortunately, he won't be joining us today. However, I'm excited, as always, to record another episode. Let's go ahead and kick this thing off by welcoming our special guest, Dr. Steve Iacovelli, to the show. How you doing, my man?
I'm good, Clint. Really, really excited to be here.
Steve, is an honor to have you on the show. And today, but specifically, right? I know I had to juggle a little bit of the schedule with you to get you on today, but I really appreciate you being flexible. But before we launch into everything, my man, can you quickly share with our audience who you are and what you're all about?
Yeah. So Dr. Steve Iacovelli, I'm owner and principal of Top Dog Learning Group. We are a learning and development, leadership, change management, and diversity and inclusion consulting firm. We're based in Orlando, Florida, USA, but we have top doggers, as I like to call them, throughout both the US, Canada, and as well as beyond.
That's awesome, man. So Steve, as the owner and principal of Top Dog, which you just mentioned, which is a learning group, obviously LLC, can you take our audience back to when your entrepreneurial journey actually started and what it is about entrepreneurship as a leader that you're excited about?
Yeah. Top Dog actually kind of was born, birthed. I don't know what's the right dog term there. But I was working at Disney at the time. I worked at Disney Cruise Line for several years as an internal leadership consultant. And I just had started and I was on board one of the Disney ships. At the time, we only had two ships. I was on the Disney Magic. And I was there shadowing the woman whose job I was taking, Ruth. And so we're sitting there and she's like, "We should start a business." I'm like, I have a job. I'm taking your job. Matter of fact, so you can go do something else at Disney. She's like, no, let's have dinner. I'm like, well, we're on a ship for 7 days. Of course we're having dinner together. So she's like, no, we have to talk. So we went to dinner and she's like, "We should start a consulting firm." I'm like, "Why?" She goes, "Just together, we're the perfect chief learning officer." She's like, and she's a little bit older, more experienced, kind of more at the executive level. I had a lot of different strengths. And then I was in the midst of pursuing my doctorate in instructional technology. So we decided, you know what, let's make this a go. So we went to our senior executive at the cruise line, the HR person, told her the deal. And she was just amazing. She's like, "Okay, this is great. Don't use Disney stuff. Don't use Disney time. Have fun, my friends." We're like, woohoo. So we kind of started the business there and it was a part-time gig. It was kind of a half excuse for us to get together and drink a bottle of wine each week and try to do some training things. And we had a couple of minor clients, but then flash forward to very late 2007. And I found myself kind of in between roles and I was trying to figure out what the heck to do. And I started applying for some jobs and then it kind of hit me. Well, wait a minute. I have this whole infrastructure from the part-time gig. Maybe let's see if that's a good thing to kind of shake it off, put it out as a full-time thing and see what happens. So I did that in January of 2008, which, as your listeners can probably figure out, was a really crappy economy to start a job, but it worked to my advantage actually. So Top Dog started as my full-time gig then, and knock on wood, it's been my full-time jam ever since.
That's awesome, man. That's a great story. I mean, it's always fun listening to everybody's story and how it's a little bit different, right? There's always that aha moment or when you go forward, you've been doing something, whether it's a side hustle, whatever it is, but it seems like if you have that entrepreneurial spirit inside you, you eventually are going to do what you're called to do. But unfortunately, some individuals don't allow that to happen, right? They don't take the risk. They're scared to take that leap of faith. And so it's just always good to hear that when we bring the entrepreneurs on, that it's always a struggle to begin with, but you always find that common, link and bond that you can identify with. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely not for everyone. And I didn't realize that. I mean, cause you just know yourself and you know what you know, and you're kind of getting on this side of it as we get to the 10-year mark, 12-year mark. And people are like, how are you doing this as a full-time thing? How are you making this work in the age of COVID? I mean, your main revenue stream was you and your people going on site and doing training. What are you doing now? And it's like, yeah, that the first couple months of all this were really horrible. But then I just took that step back and I think a lot of listeners can understand this. You have so much power and skill you probably don't really know it at some point, or you forget it. And then I had it just took one of my top doggers being like, Steve, don't you have a doctorate in instructional technology? Isn't like this your jam, distance learning? I'm like, oh yeah, it is. So we made the pivot to really do a little bit more in embracing of that, because it was maybe 15% of our business model, 85% was the live stuff. And we just now it's 100% of our stuff, of course, and it's working okay.
Yeah, man. I think the pivot is where it's at, because again, when you go from on site, when you're going into building the relationships, individuals are used to seeing you, touching you, whatever it is, right? You're a human being. They're like, he's here. They're here, right? And now it's COVID. and that's reality now. And so that threw everybody off. I mean, I'm sure some people saw it coming from a mile away. Others that are like just grinding every day inside their business, just, you know, we didn't see it coming like it did. It just happened overnight. And then everybody was thrown for a loop. So if you were not ready to pivot, or you weren't flexible to pivot and embrace that change, man, you're going to be so far behind the individuals like yourself that did.
Well, and what I think we're all realizing, for some folks, they're just like, well, this'll blow past by summer. You know, and because none of us knew, I mean, and you hear conflicting things out there. And so, you know, and I found this with my own client base after kind of the dust settled in March, a bit of April. And I started doing some pro bono webinars just to kind of keep the name out there, being top of mind, and was getting some good exposure that way. And then I kept knocking on the door of our clients and like, hey, what's going on, friends? And they're like, no, go away. We don't know what's going on. I'm like, all right, cool. So then August rolled around and it suddenly seemed like this light bulb went off for all of our clients. And they're just like, well, crap, we need to do something. We can't just not do any sort of leadership or diversity or anything, especially diversity training. I mean, that's a whole other awesome conversation point. But you know, all of them came back and said, okay, we know we can't have you on site. Your team can't come here. But Steve, what can we do? I'm like, well, I'm glad you asked. And so we started actually turning some of the conversations, the workshops, into virtual delivery, you know, maybe just giving them some, you know, little, we call them learning tapas in my business, you know, like little bite-sized nuggets of learning that they can just chew on for a minute. And then kind of we'll get deeper as you go forward, all the way to turning some of our legacy programs that were like 8 hours on site into 4-part online experiences. We spread them out over a month and it works out really well for people. Actually, from a learning perspective, it's better because you retain it, you learn something, you get a week to practice it, then you learn something new, you get another week to practice it. So we're actually seeing a lot of excitement. And there was just a thing on NPR this morning where they looked at small businesses and their optimism index, which I didn't know there was such a measurement, but there is. It's now higher than it was pre-COVID, which I think find fascinating. And I think that's those folks who are smart looking at the glass being half full will find a way to make this work, to kind of, you know, tread the water or maybe even succeed even further than you would have until all this stuff is kind of in the past.
Exactly. And I love how people are embracing everything now, you know, from the remote learning to the remote meetings to the remote, you know, working. I mean, it's like this, we've had the technology to do this forever. And we've been doing it to a certain point, but now it's like, I really don't even have to go to work to make this successful, right? Like I can sit at the house and yes, okay, when you go to an office every day, you can build that camaraderie and all that stuff. You get to see the individuals. And again, it's being there. But at the end of the day, man, you know, the people that are really more susceptible to what's going on with COVID, right? The people that have health issues. I mean, this is money for them, like clutch, that they can just sit from home, work, and still be part of the team. That's huge.
I have not worn pants since March 13th.
that's no great. That's the greatest thing, right? When we're here, it's like from the shoulders down, we're good to go, man.
Business up top, casual on the bottom.
There it is. So Steve, as a leadership coach, man, for almost 20 years, if not over that, you've had the opportunity over that, my bad. So you've had the opportunity to work with many large companies, yeah, right? Like yep. Disney, IBM, and Tupperware, to name a few.
Yep.
But what are companies like that missing from their leadership approach that you can help them with in regard to growth, development, and expansion?
I wouldn't well, all companies are different. All corporate cultures are different. And of course, all leaders are different. But what led me to write my recent book, Pride Leadership, was I started to see a pattern in the folks that I was coaching and teaching who are just like knocking it out of the park. They're rocking and rolling. And at the same time, you see the folks who are just kind of floundering and crashing and burning. And, you know, I started to see a pattern in what do those rock stars have and leverage versus the ones who don't. And so that's kind of what came up to my book, Pride Leadership. It says strategies for the LGBTQ plus leader to be the king or queen. It's not just for queer folks. It's for awesome allies and stuff. Because a lot of the concepts I talk about are universal. And you can see my blue screen kind of kicking in there for this thing. But this is my mouse pad because that's why it's in here. But I focus in on six competencies that I've seen really be the difference for leaders in the 21st century to either be awesome or not so awesome. And I kind of leverage that at first against like what's out in the industry, what's out there. You know, authenticity for the first one, for example, that's already there. People are already talking about it. Brené Brown has a great voice in this manner. But I say that, you know, what are some of the things that either LGBTQ plus people or allies really need to either identify that they're authentic? And if they have that feeling that, you know, maybe I'm not so much, here's things in the book that allow you to focus on cultivating and beefing up that authenticity.
No, I love that, man. I love how you've taken that approach. And again, like you said, it's not just for a certain set of individuals. You can learn from it. And so, and with you identifying that too, that I love that. And I love how you've taken that approach to, you know, you're being a spokesperson for the community that you're involved in, the community that you believe in, and everybody else on the outside, right?
Yeah. Well, and I didn't share before. So hi, listeners. I'm also known as the gay leadership dude. But so just so you know. So yes, I am gay. I have a husband. We've been together 23 years almost, something like that. I don't know, blends together after a while. Yeah, even with COVID, and he's working in the next room that we've converted into an office, we're still doing okay. but to the point about the book and the community. So I was going to write a generic quote unquote leadership book based upon exactly what I've said earlier, what I'm seeing and observing. And I realized there really wasn't a voice saying, hey, LGBT leader, here's some of the things that you actually have. So going back to authenticity, well, that can look very different from a straight person versus an out gay person. And that's kind of what I talk about in the book. However, just real quick story. When I wrote the book and I was getting the first level of review from my editor, Heather, the editor. And I was like nervous as heck. And I'm sitting there in a coffee shop in downtown Orlando. This is January, 2019. And she was the first person in the universe besides myself to like read my words. I was like all nervous. And technically it's my third book, but this is like my first quote unquote real book, you know, like going through a publisher and all that. And she's like, okay, Steve, I gotta tell you something. I'm like, okay. She's like, I'm a white cisgendered straight woman. I'm like, and this is the book I wanted in my MBA program. I'm like, what? She's like, no, seriously. She goes, it's really funny. You have really bad dad cheeky humor. I'm like, yes, thank you, Father. She's like, but it's everything is grounded in solid leadership theory. I'm like, of course, I'm a nerdy academic. And she's like, this was really good. She's like, you need to de-gay the book. I'm like, nah, well, let's hold off on that. I said, because I think it's cool, but I'm glad like it resonated with her. And a lot of, I've been doing a lot of podcasts, a lot of people reading it. And they're like, you know, it's not just for gays anymore. And so hopefully if y'all pick up Pride Leadership, you'll appreciate the bad dad humor with the solid leadership theory.
No, I'm sure they will, man. I mean, your energy is contagious too. So when you got on just then, it was like, you know, the positive energy that you bring to the room and that you're bringing to this podcast is really resonating. It's something that, you know, I know if they pick up that book, they start reading a few pages, it's going to come through just like it is on camera.
Thanks, Clay. And actually, I did the voiceover for the audiobook version, which I wasn't going to, but I've done voiceover work in the past. But when I was talking with my audio producer, they're like, well, you have a whole chapter on authenticity. You sure you want to think about having it someone else do it? I'm like, that's a good point. So the dad jokes are taught by me. And I did them over COVID at the beginning of the pandemic. And I had to do them in my walk-in closet because it's the quietest room. So I read my gay book in a closet, which is kind of funny.
It is. I mean, if you think about it. So, man, in 2020 and beyond, Steve, I mean, diversity and inclusion are so important to every organization. And it took a long time for that to be the case, it seems like, in a lot of situations, right? Unfortunately. And because we need different perspectives, right, to learn, grow, and become the best versions of ourselves and in our business, how can current business owners take that and begin to implement changes that will help them become more inclusive and foster a more positive environment, you know, moving forward?
Yeah. And it's one of the things I talk about in Pride Leadership, and actually a lot of the virtual keynotes and would have been real keynotes I've been doing is on a concept on being a consciously inclusive leader. And whether you are a solopreneur or you have a small group, you really should be thinking about how are you embracing inclusivity within your business, within your workplace. So that can look different in a couple of different ways. One, it's how inclusive are you with the people around you who are working for you or with you? What about your clients and who are you reaching out to? Are they similar demographics? Would any quote unquote other, and you can interpret what other means to your perspective, do they feel welcomed within your business, within your workplace? What are you doing to put it out there to say, look, I want to embrace all those other people who maybe don't look or think or act like me because I want to do business with you. And when I do a lot of these workshops, I say a smart business thinks about being inclusive in three different ways. It's the law says I have to, which, you know, it's a crappy way to think about it, but there are rules out there that you have to do certain things in order to be inclusive. So there's that way. Then there's the, well, it's, you know, on the complete opposite end, well, it's the right thing to do for society. It makes us all feel better. Yes, of course it does. And, you know, hopefully people will get there. But in that middle part is being inclusive is good to your bottom line. And if people feel that you are inclusive of any other, whether it be about race, gender, differing ability, sexual orientation, insert all the different demographics here, people will be more apt to come to you to do business. And you're seeing this very, very differently play out as Black Lives Matter, as the queer community, as misogyny is being thrown by the wayside and hashtag Me Too kind of things occur. People are really starting to focus their energy on, well, gosh, I have money. Do I want to spend money on someone who's going against my community or just being kind of a jerk, or spend it with somebody who's like not just delivering good products and services, but oh, they're also making the world a better place? And that's a smart position for any business owner to be in, is knowing that they need to be inclusive, because not only is it good business sense, but, you know, ultimately it's the right thing to do.
For sure. Oh no, I totally agree 100%. And like I said, unfortunately, it's taken almost this long, and it really, I mean, the Black Lives Matter movement, right? I mean, everybody's jumping on that and supporting it. But why did it take until now? Or why did it take until all of this craziness or madness happening for everybody to do this? And so that's what I've been battling with, because as I was raised, you know, I have family members that, you know, I would hear, you know, an African-American be called the N-word. And that's just not good. It's toxic, right? Or this, or hey, that's a gay guy. Like, what does that matter? You know, like if they're good individuals and they're leading lives how, you know, you would want them to, what does any of that matter? Why can't we just sit at a table, agree to disagree on things, however you are raised, but also be accepting of the individuals how they are and not be so divisive? And I think, again, it's a good thing that we're going through what we're going through in society today. But I just wish everybody was more, you know, more acceptive of whatever it is, because, again, we all have different views and we can all learn from each other. Right.
Yeah. And I take it even a step further, Clint, and say, you know, one of the things that when people are just starting their inclusivity journey, you know, one of the first things they say is, oh, I can't be blank. I can't be racist. I have a Black friend, you know. Okay, so or I'm colorblind, and I really challenge people to rethink that, because one of the things that makes us so awesome and unique, beautiful individual humans is our differences and how we approach and look at the world. So when someone says, I don't see color, I'm like, well, that's wrong. I mean, you may think that, but you kind of do, and you should want to see that color because that's what makes that person really cool and unique. You want to have them share that perspective, because not only is that really broadened your own perspective, but now bring it back to my business. You know, I want to understand what my Black and Brown friends think about my consulting practice in diversity inclusion. And am I missing something as, you know, the gay white dude? And so, and same with my straight and cisgendered brothers and sisters out there. We all want to understand the perspectives. And I think that's the opportunity that we have now. It sucks that it took all this tipping point to happen, but I think it truly is a tipping point in that you can't shut that barn door again. You can't put that magic back in the bottle, or that spiriting it back in the bottle should be magic. And I think that's the hopefully the cool part of what's going to come out of this.
Yeah. The lock has been totally kicked off the door, right? I mean, there's no, it has to go, like, again, if we're not trying to better the situation, what are we trying to do? And I just think as long as we, again, do what's right at the end of the day, we're going to be so much further along in place of where we were in the past. Don't try to hide things, right? Don't keep things uncovered, or again, try to put it back in the bottle. Don't put the genie back in the bottle, because he's going to come out again when he gets rubbed, right? I mean, it's going to happen. And so you just kind of want to avoid that whole, because it becomes a disaster at the end of the day.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the things, again, talking about the being a constant inclusive leader, it really ties to the concept of allyship. And so if I want to be a consciously inclusive leader and foster a feeling of belonging for all my customers, all my employees, whatever that looks like, the number one leader, this is like the massive secret to leadership in case anyone here is listening. Someone asked me, you know, what is the secret? I said, you know, I could have taken this 356 page book and turned it into one page with one word, and it's trust. They're like, what? I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. But how do you foster trust? Well, there's lots of different ways, but one of the best ways is to just listen and, you know, ask your Black and Brown friends, how are you feeling? What's happening? And then for me as a white person, shut the heck up and listen. And don't do as what, you know, to paraphrase Stephen Covey, you don't want to listen to respond like we typically do. You want to listen to understand and really try to get behind what are they saying? What are those feelings? What are those reactions? I will never truly understand what it's like to be discriminated against this color of my skin for that perspective. But have I been gay bashed? Have I been put in the hospital because I'm gay? Absolutely, I have. I have the scar over here to prove it. And so I can maybe make that jump for understanding a little bit, but the best way I'm going to try to get into that understanding is just to ask and listen.
I love it, man. I love the leadership approach and how that should be built in to just a business in general, right? Especially if you have employees or plan to hire anybody in the future. I mean, I think that goes a long way because, you know, I know, has there been people not hired for being gay or a certain color? I'm sure. Right. And so it's like, come on, man, we're 2020. We have to get past this and be better.
Unfortunately, unconscious bias is still a thing. And that's one of the things we teach in my workshop. So if anyone listening, if you want to try to explore yours, if you Google Project Implicit, there's a free online assessment you can go to backed by research to just start to play around with understanding your own unconscious biases. Because if you're listening, you have a bias somewhere, you know, and that's not to say, I mean, I teach this crap and I've been doing it and I know I have a bias, but the cool thing is, one, once you know your biases, then two, you can work to de-bias yourself. And that's the exciting thing is you can take that journey to really make an effort to mitigate those unconscious biases that you have so that you can be more inclusive, not just for work, but of course for everything beyond.
Yeah. And I love that you bring this up because I think a lot of this stuff and a lot of the negativity is also learned behavior too, right? What you're exposed to, who you're around. But the good thing about me and for some reason, you know, I've just never have let any of my family members, any of the individuals around me really shape what I view. You know, it's always like I come to my own decision because I know if what right looks like. And when something doesn't look right, whether it's in my family or outside of the family, it's like I kind of shut that off because I'm like, that's not what I want in my life, right? Because if it's a negative viewpoint and you're trying to push that on me because that's how you're raised or that's how you see the world, I don't want nothing of it. And so I'm going to exit stage left. And then I'm going to go and continue to create my world like I see it, right? To try to bridge those relationships with the people that, again, might feel outcast, might feel alone because they're getting shunned. And I don't think that's right.
Or the other thing you can do is, if you're feeling brave, so we talk about, you know, courage here is one of my things. If you're feeling courageous as a leader, you start to poke and understand the why behind that feeling or that perspective. So why did I true story, I was in a meeting and it was this client in Atlanta. We were like closing out a project. There was like 30 people from the client there. It was myself and one of my top doggers. And just as the meeting's about to start, you heard the senior executive at that kind of head of the boardroom, who's male, and that's important to the story. Just as the meeting, the sound's dying down, you hear this senior executive guy go, "Well, you know how all women drive." And silence. No one said a word. And so there was this opportunity at that moment for us to do one of two things. I was about to do it. And Lori, my awesome top dogger, kind of kicks me on the table and says, "Wait." And I'll tell you why in just a few moments. But at that moment, when none of us said anything, what we're doing is we're engaging in what's called silent collusion. So we're tacitly approving that. And so as a leader, this is where that courage thing comes in. You have an opportunity right at that moment to create a spot for inclusivity, because I'm sure all the women in the room are just like, "What?" And so a lot of us men were just like, "What?" So as a leader, what we can do is to foster an inclusive workplace. We can try to mitigate those things. And in my book and in my workshops, I talk about six ways you can mitigate silent collusion. But one of them is you say a non-word that makes it known that you personally do not agree. And that's actually what happened in this story. There's a gentleman kind of sitting to the side of the boardroom, and you know, this guy's, "Oh, you know, all women drive." Everyone just kind of looked. And this guy goes, "Damn." And so it made it completely known he was not on board with that statement. And then that's when the rest of them started kind of going through like, "Yeah, Bob, what did you mean by that?" And Bob's like, "Oh, I didn't know." Yeah, but luckily this gentleman had that courage to do that. Otherwise, that statement kind of could have been left out there. He would have actually eroded trust as a leader with the female in the room. And the reason Lori didn't want me to say anything, because I'm all about courage with this kind of stuff, that's why I teach. This is our last engagement with them, and she wanted to see, rightfully so, what their organizational culture would do at that moment. And I'm so glad she did. That was cool.
That's a good call. That's a good call for sure. I mean, look, it's like, hey, identifying that as fast as she did, and then saying, "Don't do it."
Hey, she knows me well enough to be like,
"It's like, you sit it out." Yeah, because you're ready to duke it out, right? You're like, "Come on, man, this is not right. Why did you say this?"
And then, and in hindsight, I mean, and this, the gentleman who did the damn, he was like just graduated from business school, had just joined the project like a month before we ended. So the fact that it came internal from someone with not a lot of political clout in the business was even more awesome. And it just kind of started to create that culture of inclusiveness that we personally at Top Dog try to strive to create.
I love that story, my man. I really appreciate you sharing that with us, for sure. So Steve, with your leadership and all the strategy, you know, the organizational learning and communication, you can tell that you're a rare breed of professional, right? That understands the power of using academic theory. You mentioned it yourself, you know, you threw the nerd word in there. I'm like, "Nah, totally, man, just because you're in academia doesn't mean you're a nerd, my man." You know,
you can't see all the books around me that I'm like totally Jones in the read again.
You know, and when I'm saying that and applying it to a corporate setting to achieve business results, how important has it been for you to use that, you know, leadership or experience that you've fostered over 25 plus years, and how much of it has led to where you are today in your career as an entrepreneur?
That's a great question. So when I think about, you know, I have a lot of experience, but I have a lot of school in as well. I will be the absolute first to say I know a lot of stupid PhDs. I know a lot of brilliant high school graduates, my father being the first one on top of the list. So while I appreciate formal education, I think there's a nice balance, and you just kind of have to be open to both. And I could tell you another story about having been a full-time faculty member for a hot minute, but there's that. But when I think about, you know, what has really been one of the biggest leadership competencies that I've leaned on a lot, and I go back to my master's is actually in educational policy and leadership, and from Ohio State, go Bucks. But the big focus on it was counseling psychology, and I thought, why am I going through this stuff? Blah, blah. It is like the best thing ever, and I think any leader who's out there, and really, and I know I've said this earlier, but when that you boil that down to, successful leadership coaches, leaders, period, are the ones who ask really good questions and then listen for the answers. And so, you know, I'm very, very good about, and it's taken practice, but I'm very good about asking questions. You know, well, Clint, that's a really interesting perspective. Tell me more about that. Now, there that sentence alone, we can unpack that quite easily in a couple ways. One, I didn't judge you. I may completely disagree with what you just said, you know, but I wanted to honor who you are. So I'm not kind of creating like fisticuffs from the beginning. So, you know, that's a really interesting perspective. I didn't say I agree. Didn't say I hated it. How did you get there, Clint? And so, and then I kind of back off and let you do your jam. And that's a smart leadership strategy because it's giving me a window into your perspective, because your perspective is your reality and that's awesome. But two, it's now we're having a dialogue versus me telling you what, how you should think. And then three, it's also the delivery method. So I didn't say, well, that's an interesting perspective, Clint. How'd you get there? There's a different connotation and meaning in that sentence. And how did you get there, Clint? And so, you know, as a leader, we want to be mindful of asking the right questions, watching the tone on how we ask those questions, and then truly stopping and listening for the responses so that we can kind of engage and understand that different perspective than maybe the one we have.
Oh man, I love that. I love your insight on however all of these questions, you're just knocking them out. And like, look, the 25 plus years of experience and everything you've had in this journey, you can tell that you're definitely ready to roll with anything. And I love it, man.
I'm creeping on 50 in like a few weeks. It's like, no.
Hey, we all get there at some point, right?
That's all right. It's all good.
So man, through your entrepreneurial journey, right? I mean, we all had our highs and lows. We're still experiencing highs and lows, right? COVID was one of them. So what has been the most difficult thing for you to date being an entrepreneur? How did you combat that, right? If you have.
If I have, that's a question. Have, yeah. No, I think for me, and I actually had, you know, the phrase physician heal thyself. So one of the things that we do at Top Dog, as I shared, is change management and resilience. And resilience is the concept of being resilient in times of change. And so I teach this stuff. I've been teaching it for years, but sometimes it is really difficult for me to be very resilient. I'll be the first to admit it. And I'm a very glass half full kind of guy, but, you know, to be very blunt this year. So, you know, I made the decision in 2017 that I wanted to be more than just me, because I was just doing my own really solopreneur thing, had a bunch of clients, I travel. I mean, it was great. It was a wonderful living. I made nice money. I got to travel about twice a month and it was cool. But then I decided at that year, I'm like, you know what? And my friend warned me about this. She's like, you're going to get to a crossroads in your business, either that you want to grow or you want a status quo. And I'm like, that's a nice way to phrase it. Grow or status quo. And so I decided I wanted to grow because, especially around the being inclusiveness, my army of awesomeness is going to make a change in the world bigger than just Steve. So I decided to make a decision to grow. And at that point, it got a little bit weird. So that was like my big adversity, because now I'm like hiring 1099 consultants and I got to give them some bones here versus taking them for me. So there was that. But then we finally got it to the point that we have like four really big clients that we do like years worth of work for them. So like one of our big pharma companies, we are the certified vendor to do all their leadership training for North America. So we book that all a year in advance. And that's like, you know, a six-figure gorgeous chunk of change to run the business. And so we finally got the process down to where by February, we're booked throughout the year, which is a gorgeous position to be in, because then anything else above that is just gravy or just adds to the bottom line. I can pursue different revenue streams. So there was kind of that whole thing. Well, it took a little bit. There were some things in the market. They had some mergers, acquisitions that kind of threw things off. Things stabilized. And as of February 2020, we were sold for the whole year. And several of our other clients were right there. Well, then of course I lost, you know, a lot of money in the course of a week and a half once the lockdown happened. And so I bring all this up because the biggest thing that I ebb and flow with as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, is the whole marketing thing. We do amazing work at Top Dog with it, whether it's creating learning, doing our stuff off the shelf, whatever. But if people don't know about it, they're not going to buy. And so there's that constant drumming of getting the message out there. And so I've actually been working with a marketing coach who she's been just phenomenal to kind of just point us in the right direction to be like, hey, have you considered this? Have you thought about that? What are you doing as your value proposition? I'm like, these are all good questions I never had to think about. So, so I think like, you know, and I guess like to make it even broader is if you know what your biggest challenge is, awesome. As a business owner, find the right resources to help you if you don't have the internal drive to learn it yourself and, you know, yeah, all that good stuff.
Or you just don't know what you don't know, right? I mean, when it comes down to it, like, that's why I have coaches perfect for certain situations like that. You might be a coach yourself, but you might not be a coach in this specific lane. And so you're like, man, I kind of suck at marketing, or we're good at everything else, right, but marketing, we're slipping. And then you have a marketing coach that fulfills that and helps you. Oh, hey, that's a great question. Maybe I thought about it one time, kind of pushed it off because it was like, ah, it's not something I want to really worry about right now because it's dealing with marketing, right? Right. Well, not exactly what I need to do right now. Job.
Well, and my undergrad's in PR marketing, ironically enough, but you know, I graduated from undergrad in 93. Yeah, the interwebs so wasn't a thing.
Yeah. So that's ages ago, right?
When right?
So, but it's always good to stay in your genius, right? Stay where you are going to be most productive. There's no reason to bog yourself down or your team of that matter if they're not strong in that. It's like, hey, Susan, I need you to be the marketer. I know you or me, we have no clue. Figure it out, right? And now she's going to struggle. You're passing your burden off to her now. And that's like, Steve, that's not what I do. Hey, we're going to figure it out. And then now she's going to struggle. You're going to continue to struggle on marketing. Now you have two individuals that when it comes down to it, you're like, Susan, what happened? Like, Steve, I'm still trying to figure this thing out, right? I mean, again, the marketing coach is genius. And I get that feeling from everybody else. Anytime you talk to somebody, a successful person, they'll have that mentor, they'll have that coach, somebody that gives them that kick in the butt, because we still get complacent as business owners and entrepreneurs all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because I knew this about myself last summer when Pride Leadership came out and I was trying to, no pun intended, I was trying to really focus on a lot of my keynote speaking, you know, so while my top doggers were doing the client stuff, I was trying to build the Gay Leadership Dude brand, all the things that go with it. And, you know, like putting together an 8-week online leadership training program, which luckily I did do that because I had an LMS in place, learning management system in place. And I mean, that was built. And so we could launch that in April when we planned on it, which was good. But one of the things that we came up with last year's marketing coach, and he couldn't have done any better, but you know, we were going for two tent pole big events in my industry, you know, conferences. That's that. Exactly. So that's where like the second marketing coach came in. It was a little bit more savvy in the social and digital space. So.
Yeah, that's clutch to identify that though, right? Never You're learned. Like, hey, you did everything you could within your realm of whatever, but you didn't have this knowledge in the social game, and now you have somebody that helped you step your game up, and that's awesome. So Steve, man, as we wrap up this episode, and I've enjoyed every second of this, man, if you could leave our listeners with one piece of advice, what would it be? And these are entrepreneurs we're talking about.
Yep. As an entrepreneur, it's never too early to think about what corporate culture, and I say corporate on purpose, but what corporate culture do you want to create? Because even if it's just you, sit down and identify your vision, your mission, your personal values from a business perspective. And they might be the same as yours, of course. But chances are you're going to be a rock star and you're going to grow. And so when you add that second person, you already have that vision and mission. And yes, you can change them going down the road. That's totally fine. But you can have that starting point for them where you can say, hey, here's the five values I want us to kind of operate in. Do you agree, person number two? Yeah, that's cool, Steve. I'm on board. Great. Now we add person number three. And so what you're going to find as you start to grow is that you maintain that organizational culture that you as the owner and the visionary had at the beginning. And yes, revisit that. That's one of the things we do. We actually talk to clients and help them revisit that periodically just to make sure they're still in line because the stuff changes. But it is absolutely never too early to start thinking about what corporate culture you're going to have when you have 10 employees, 20 employees, 100 employees, and how do you going to foster that today?
Oh, I love it, man. I think that is very important and somewhat overlooked in some cases. And me having a digital marketing agency and sitting down with business owners that don't have their mission laid out, that don't have their why, that don't have their avatar, you know, it's like, I get so frustrated when I sit down with some business owners, but at the end of the day, I'm there to educate them too, because they don't, I can't fault them for not knowing what they don't know. But I'm like, why hasn't this even been thought of? Like, you started a business with no business plan. Like, that kind of hurts my head a little bit, but I can try to help you here if I need to. Right. But I mean, like you said, man, have that plan, what you need. Yep. And I love that, man.
Awesome.
So Steve, I think that's a wrap for this episode, but man, I want to thank you personally for taking the time out of your day and being very flexible with your schedule and helping me add value to what we're trying to do on our podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the time and topdoglearning.biz. And matter of fact, if you go to the top, you'll see a link to get a copy of my book for free. As long as you're in the US, there's that stipulation, but like I said, I'm not trying to make gazillions of dollars off of a book. That's kind of not why you write books, but it's really to help every leader out there, regardless of if you're LGBTQ or not, be more successful. So go get Pride Leadership and hopefully you can get some nuggets of wisdom to help your business out.
Love it, man. So guys, thank you so much for listening to That Entrepreneur Life. To learn more about what Steve's working on, just like he said, check out topdoglearning.biz. If you like what you heard today, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or any other major podcast directory. You can also find us on all the socials and on our website at thatentrepreneurlife.com. And with that said, we also want to quickly give a special shout out to our family and friends, to include all of our listeners, followers, and subscribers. Thanks for continuing to support what we do as entrepreneurs. And don't forget to join us next week for another episode of That Entrepreneur Life.
Thanks for listening to That Entrepreneur Life podcast. Be sure to visit thatentrepreneurlife.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode as we continue to add value. Until next time.